going to talk to you, the guy that did it.
Okay, fine.
So we're essentially, just to catch you up here, we're dealing with a double relationship that Hashem has with the Jewish people. One aspect of the relationship is the aspect of son, the other one is the aspect of a wife. We're in the wife mode here, trying to understand our relationship with HaKadosh Baruch Hu as the wife. He's the husband, we're the wife. So we said the first 2,000 years, the 2,000 years of Torah, just catching up, you've been away for a while. 2,000 years of Torah was where the Chosin showed himself to the color. The miracles that came out of Egypt, he gave us the Torah. He revealed himself to us totally in a way that we barely had free will to choose to say yes or no. That's called the period of Luchos Rishon. Luchos Sheni was the period starting round about the times of the destruction of the first temple. By the time the second temple came along, the darkness already set in. The 10 miracles that you had in the first temple, you already didn't have in the second temple. That begins the 2,000 years of Ikfasid and Mashiach, which heralds the period we're in at the moment, where the color gets to prove her dedication to the Chosin, where the Chosin's not shining so bright. The difference, we said, between Luchos Rishon and Luchos Sheni was Luchos Rishon, whatever you learned, you remembered. Luchos Sheni, you have to tell you guys that when you learn, you forget, right? When you think you understand it, you realize you didn't understand it. It's a toiling in Torah. It's coming at the color coming at the Chosin, the bride coming at the groom, in a way that shows her dedication under the most difficult circumstances, whether it's in Auschwitz, whether it's in the Inquisition, no matter what the Jewish people went through, we showed our dedication to Hashem. That's where we got up to. And we're now going to bring examples, known examples, where we see this manifesting what's going on. But it's important to remember what you're living in. If you think you're living in a Tekufa of Luchos Rishon, if you're living in the first tablets, if that's where you think you're living, you're off the mark completely. You're going to get frustrated when you learn and you forget. Yeah? You're going to get upset because you're giving so much to Hashem and it's dark out there. We don't see the spiritual light shining. It's exactly like that. It's designed to be like that. When a Jew sings himself into the gas chamber, going, Ashreinu Matov Chalkeinu, into the gas chamber, that's exactly what the gas chamber was there for. It's exactly what it was there for. An opportunity for a Jew to dedicate his life to Kosh Bov and say, Hashem, you can even take my life away from me, but the love I have from you, you can never take away from me. And that's what Jews did year after year after year. Young children understood this. Young children were prepared to get burnt in shuls rather than come outside and kiss the cross. The evidence. Come outside, kiss the cross, and you can go home. 6-year-olds knew that you don't do that. No coercion. I mean, we know now, Hannah's 7 sons, that's the Hanukkah story. Hannah's 2-year-old knew. Yeah? You can kill me if you want, but I'm not buying down to no idols. I'm not uprooting the purpose of what I'm living for. For you. You want to kill me? You can kill me. But you can't take my love for Hashem away. That is what Jews always knew, and that's what this generation is supposed to be showing. Okay. So maybe Rebbe Agoyin Revise Mandel's that soul. Hayerogel is a place of Sipur Abov. Revise Mandel wrote an amazing sefer called Bein HaMetzorim. Between the hard periods. Revise Mandel was one of those that was involved at the most highest levels of saving Jews from the Holocaust. And he wrote a book about his efforts and what he encountered in trying to save Jews from the Holocaust. The biggest resistance he found was from the Jewish forces. The most difficult resistance that he found was from the Jewish world. The Reform Movement wouldn't allow him to send money, but it was from a Wasserman, to send money from America to Germany because it was against the law. The Germans were prepared to take bribes to let Jews go. The Reform Movement wouldn't let them send money because it was against, you know, the law in America, you can't send money to an enemy state. You understand that? But to save a Jewish life, if you can get $1,000, that's how they saved the Meir Yeshiva. Rav Kalman Ovitz sent money from America to, and then they managed to pay for the visas to get the whole Meir Yeshiva got saved like that. And the Reform Movement put a block in the way. They wouldn't let them send money out to save life. He describes it, and it's well documented in his book. Rav Mandel was Rav Taube's Rebbe. Amazing, amazing stories that he brings down there. How many lives they saved, you can't imagine. So, B'shnei Sazom, B'zman Achisul HaSofi Shel Ira Nitro Shepet Czechoslovakia, in the town of Nitri, in Czechoslovakia, at the final Chisul, what's the word, what do they call them, emptying out, there's a word for it, not no, evacuation, no. They had a word for it, the Germans had a word for it. Liquidation. The liquidation of the ghetto, the final liquidation of the ghetto of Nitri, Czechoslovakia. Ha'ira Germanim b'shas eboike mukdemes es Yudi ha'ir. The Germans woke the Jews of the city very early. Girshu otam betayim. V'doch shroitam l'karmes bakar. They put them in the caravans, in the cattle tracks. to send them off to the gas chambers. Mishpachos shleimos, avos, imos, v'yeladim rakim, mothers, fathers, little children, na'atzlu litztoifef at kilon nois lem of kaimus yeshiva. They were jammed into the gas chambers, into the cattle truck. Mama squished in there. You couldn't stand. You couldn't sit. V'kach tachas Hashemesh ha'koyfeches shechimam li'ita is the funnest akarnavot. In the terrible heat or whatever, they closed the windows and they shut them in, and there was all the, you know, well documented stories. Amdin alolechem v'mayim v'ein Moshiach. Standing in these cattle trucks, parked in the sun for hours and hours, no water, no bread, nothing. One of the Jews in this caravan, in this railway truck, was a simple Jew who was a chicken farmer. What do they call him? They call him Korons, the coach. Yeah. He, like everybody else, was standing there squished up in this thing. With his family and his children. Hakatanim, Meshavim, Mitzchananim, Letipas Mayim. The children are screaming, they want a bit of water. Ach, Liudi Zeh, Daigat Achoret Beroishah. This Jew had another problem on his head. What's worrying a Jew at this time? When you think about it, where, put your head into this place. Where, what would be bothering you now? Humavchit, Mevad Lechalon Hakatan Shel HaKaravan. He eventually squeezed himself with a little hot window at the top of the caravan, and he got himself to the window. There was a Jew walking past in the street. He was one of the Jews that had saved his life by working for the Germans. Yeah, there were a lot of Jews that they got killed in the end also. But there was a period of time where the Germans began to immigrate. If you work for us, they let them live. So walking past, this coach is one of these Jews. The chicken farmer calls the Jew and he says, Moshe, seli tova, do me a favor. What's he going to ask for? Give me a glass of water, right? Gash lebeiti ma'ochel esatar negolet. Please go to my house and feed the chickens. Zechotav alichayim doraita. Don't forget that there's a mitzvah in the Torah not to cause your animals pain. You have to see the animals before you eat, you know that. If you have chickens or you have budgerigars in your house, or you have goldfish, you have to feed them before you can eat yourself. It's a loch in the Torah. You don't want to sit out to my big breakfast and your cow sitting outside hungry. You have to first feed your cow, then you can eat. So he has a Jew on his way to Auschwitz, on the way to the gas chambers, stuck in a sauna bath with everything on his head. And what's bothering him? There's a mitzvah in the Torah, I've got to feed my chickens. How am I going to do that? You see, godless, yeah, that's greatness or not? You did say I am not in the matter of Naira Bolim La'abed, it's called Telemenosh. Put in a situation where you could lose all your human dimension. People went out of their minds in a situation like that. He could have said, you got a mitzvah Tzav Alechaim, what about me? This is not Tzav Alechaim, at least Tzav Alechaim on me. If I'm not good enough for you as a Jew, at least save me as an animal. You're not allowed to do what they do to us. You're not allowed to do that to a dog. And if I'm not allowed to be at least considered as an animal, what if my children sin? That's not something you could scream at a Kodesh Baruch Hu for a moment like that. My children are screaming for food and water, and I can't give them. At least you give them. Even in such a debased human situation like this, this Jew didn't lose for 1 second his cleaving and his emunah and his faith in the Kodesh Baruch Hu. Even though now it doesn't look like we can understand what's going on here, whatever, but we know somewhere in here this is the best thing for me right now. Even though we can't understand it, human understanding can't understand it. It requires something much deeper in the spirit of a human being to know this is good for me. I'm prepared to give my life for this. By the way, until you know what you're prepared to give your life for, you don't know what you're living for. That's the whole Hanukkah story. What was the difference between Matisyahu, Kohen Gadol, and everybody else who stood by watching what was going on and said nothing and did nothing? And not only that, became good Greeks themselves. What was the difference? How come he was prepared to go to war against the Greek army? You go to war against the world's biggest army with what? With some knives and stones? You know why he was prepared to do that? Because he knew what he was living for. And if you know what you're living for, how do you know what you're living for? Because you know what you're ready to die for. He was not prepared to bring a pig on a mizbeach to an idol. That he knew I'm not doing. That's what they wanted him to do. That's what they wanted him to do. That's when he killed the soldiers, and that's when the rebellion started. They came into Modi'in and they built an altar to their idol, and they wanted the Jews to come forward and sacrifice a pig on that idol to their god. And that Matisyahu said, excuse me, you've crossed the red line with me. And he went and he killed the Roman general that was part of that brigade that had come into Modi'in. That started the whole rebellion. How did he do that? He knew he was risking his life. But you know what you're living for? You know what you're living for? What's the problem? Of course you'll die for that. And if you don't know what you're living for, life's just another year. Today, tomorrow, whatever. Yeah, you got to, that's called living. These Jews knew what they were preparing. He was preparing to give up his life. That's what I'm living for. The mitzvah in the Torah, this is the Ratzon of Hashem. I'm stuck here. That's Hashem. That's Hashem's business. That I can't do anything about. What can I do? What aspect of free will do I have left? Moshe, go to my house and feed my chicken. It's graceless, no? You want to talk something?
It seems to me that this is a Bechinat Yishmael, right?
What's a Bechinat Yishmael?
They know it, they're willing to die for it.
That's why all the Mephoshim that discuss this last exile called Golas Yishmael. That's a shame. My presentation will be ready in a week or two.
Oh, you're
working. I've been working on it for many years, but it's come to a head now. Somebody's got to do something. The missiles hitting, 80 missiles hit Israel yesterday. No one gets up and says, God, let's fly. Let's go to stay right. Everybody keep Shabbos. Let's see if that stops the rockets. No one's going up there and saying, what's the antidote? Akash Bok was talking to us very loudly, and he's using who he said he would use from the beginning. Yishmael is Yishmael. What's Yishmael to Yah? To Yah God. Yishmael's job in the world is to get us to Yah God. That's what he's in the world for. That's his name. That's his essence. And how does he come at us? In the name of God and ready to die for it. Because we're not prepared to do it anymore. Let me explain. There's a simple principle in the world. There's certain things which are uniquely Jewish. The ability to have an achdus, to be one, to be united, is a uniquely Jewish quality. The nations of the world have never been able to be united. There were 70 nations, and each one lived alone, and they did their own things, and they had their little wars and battles amongst them. There was the Austrian-Hungarian Empire, and then there was the Prussian-German Empire, and there was the nations of the world could never ever get together, right? England was at war with China, and India was at war with that's the nature of the Goyish world, is pirud, and the nature of the Jewish world is unification. That's the Maharal discusses at length. When we don't use the unique qualities we have, we don't utilize them properly and give them to the Goyim. There's never been one thing that the Goyim have agreed on more than that the Jewish people have no right to exist. The United Nations. What is the United Nations? It's not possible for them to agree on anything except one thing. They agree on one thing and one thing only. Yeah? You've got to get rid of the Jewish people. They don't agree on anything else. They've never agreed on anything. They've never done anything else.
Got to get rid of the Jewish people.
The United Nations is the... Who speaks at the United Nations and gets a standing ovation? The leader of Iran gets up and stands up in the United Nations and says that the only people that don't have a right to exist, the only state that's never happened before, to claim that a member of the United Nations doesn't have a right to exist. I'm talking about according to their rules and regulations. It's an abomination. Forget about that. According to them, constitutes abomination, and the guy gets a standing ovation? Now you've got to be blind not to see what Hashem's saying here. I mean, this is pashut. You know who's giving the alternative speech today in England on Channel 4 television? Every year they have an alternative speech. They have the Queen and they have somebody else. You know who's giving it this year in England? The leader of Iran.
Really?
Yeah? He's the guest speaker today in London.
You're joking.
What are you talking about? You don't see what's going on here? The Jewish people have to wake up. And the response is not a political response, and the response is not a socio-economic response. The response is, of course, Bochus talked to us. We have to do tshuva. It's simple. We have to get back to Hashem. Hashem wants our attention. So who did he use? Someone who's coming in the name of God. Yeah? And he's prepared to die to do it. That's telling us that ability we had to give up our lives for Hashem, we're not using properly. So Hashem gives it to someone else to use against us. Always like that. Go to Jewish history, you'll see it clearly. The Nazis in Mach Shmoyim were not prepared to give up their lives to kill us. They didn't want to.
They were, no?
The soldiers got sent to cattle fodder. The armies only used soldiers.
Some of the trains they diverted, that the proof that they say it was a self-destructing force, they sent trains to kill Jews instead of win the war.
Correct, that's because Hitler wanted to kill Jews or whatever, but in every soldier that went to war wanted to try and survive. That's why they were happy to use local populations to do the dirty work. They don't want to get their hands dirty. So we see today people are coming at us, the prosecutor. The Brisker River, he spoke about this, you said in the Pasuk, you tell him, it says, Kedvairim, they come just like bees. What's a bee? A bee is something that'll sting you, knowing that he'll die. Zeg Yishmael, that's Yishmael. Yishmael will die to kill you, because that's his tough kid, that's his purpose in the world. He's doing what he's supposed to do, he's trying to wake us up. And what do? We kind of, we don't know what to do, we bamboozle. And the nature, you have to know, the nature of this exile called Golas Yishmael is the difficultness of it. It says the most difficult exile of all. The difficulty of it is there's no solution. You have to know that. There is no solution. I'll prove it to you. The greatest military might in the world today, one of the greatest military might in this country, has been unable to solve a very simple, basic, homemade missile problem. Can't you win? You can't beat these guys. There's no way to win a war against these people. There's no way. It's impossible. And that's exactly why it's happening. Because up to now, we were always able to solve our problems without God. Today, Hashem's saying, without me, you must be in serious trouble. You have to do children. That's the call. Kosh Baruch Hu's saying, Mars, here I am. I love you. I care for you. No, let's get back together again. It's been too long. 2,000 years we've been living in this estranged relationship. It's time to actually come home. And we keep pushing him further and further away. Yeah, now when the next economic upturn happens, then we'll have more money to buy better bombs, and then we'll really win the war. That's what you hear people, intelligent people, that's what they say. Now things are a bit hard because the economy's bad, we don't really have the money for research and technology, but we're getting there. In the next upswing, things will be better. Okay. And it's not just in physicality that we become like that. In our spiritual lives we become like that as well. We have no reliance on Hashem. Even in our spiritual lives we're very comfortable. Everything's wonderful. There are a lot of rich people in America. They pay for the yeshivas and everything's great. You need Hashem. To even run a yeshiva today, you don't even need Hashem. So Hashem said, you know what? Let's pull the plug on that one and see what happens. And then what happens? How are we going to keep the yeshivas going? You know, the rich guy, well, what's going to be? You have to turn to Hashem even for the yeshivas. You're going to have to actually bring Hashem back into the yeshivas. Yeah, that's also going to have to happen. Slowly, this is what's going on in the world today. You didn't get the message in Shemitah. What's the message of Shemitah? Hashem's the boss, right? Put the land aside, don't worry. What did you eat? Hashem says, don't worry, I'll feed you. I'll take care of you. Don't worry. You don't get the message in Shemitah. So after Shemitah, you have to get the message. The Twin Towers collapsed on Motse Shvir 7 years ago. The banks collapsed this time, Motse Shvir, to the day. I think it was Lehman Brothers crashed, I think, the day after the anniversary of 7/11. Right? You're supposed to, there's something going on there, or we're not supposed to look at those things. They were busy having the memorial for the Twin Towers 7 years, the day after Motse Shvir, and that was on the Friday, and that Sunday Lehman's closed, and that was the beginning of this whole come on. So I know what the answer, we know what the answer is, but business, at least be aware of the facts of this, know to look at the world, there's a world out there changing, and it makes demands on us. That's the darkness, that's what we're living with here. There were Jews that lived through this darkness. Instead of losing their minds and instead of getting all broken and devastated and what will be and how will I survive or whatever, said, because God, you took this away from me. Okay, that you can have, it's yours. The food you give me, where do I get food from? Hashem gives it to me. So you don't give it to me, that's your business. I've got no claim to be fed. I have a right to be fed. No, what do I have a right to? My own free will. That I call it Baruch Hu, you can't interfere with. My decision, my free will to be dedicated to you, that you can't take away from me. That's the demand, and that's a hard test. It's not easy. It's a day by day struggle. It's difficult. So how do you survive? The few individual Jews that understand this have to help each other and strengthen each other, mechazek each other. The Yerayim, Dvorim, Zeim, Zeh, the ones that fear God have to speak one to the other. Another little chabura, another little talk, another little chizuk, pat your buddy on the back, let's go. Listen, we have 2,000 years of knowing how to survive difficult times. It's one thing the Jewish people know. How to survive easy times we weren't so good at and nearly destroyed us. The easy times of America nearly wiped out 70% of the Jewish people. Assimilation devastated us more than Hitler did. We're much better surviving difficult times than easy times. Easy times are not that good for the Jewish people. We didn't know what to do in America. The land of the free, what happened? We became going. 75% all over the Western world. Assimilation devastated whole communities. Auschwitz, that we know how to deal with. That Jews somehow know how to deal with 2,000 years of suffering. We know how to deal with suffering. How to deal with easy times. We're not so good at it. Anyway, let's try and get some more chizuk. V'nei gambeman to build there, we did that. You're trying to take away my mun and my Torah, Hashem. You're squeezing me into a situation where you're trying to take away my mun and Torah. But I'm going to hold on to it and you're not going to take it away from me. Where did you learn that from? He learned that from the Gemara we saw in the Rishalmi. When after the Chet HaEgel, Moshe Rabbeinu came down and Kosh Boch tried to grab the Luchos from Moshe and Moshe held on to them and he wouldn't let them go. Because Moshe understood that if you can use free will to worship the Chet HaEgel, then you can use free will to fight against Hashem and keep the Torah when he's trying to take it away from you. And he did. And Moshe Rabbeinu got the Torah, got the Luchos, shattered them, broke them, because he understood that there was a need to have this thing called Luchos Sheini, to go into this period where we'll have to dedicate ourselves and not just get it as a freebie. And Hashem said, well done! Well done! That's how we learned the sugya when we did this last week. And even now, says this Jew in the kettle vans on the way to Auschwitz, he says, you're not going to take it away from me. Even in this awesome situation, I want to keep your mitzvahs. You've left me with nothing. You've dragged me like a sardine to a sardine can. You've tied my hand behind my back. I have nothing to eat or drink, so I can't even make a brocha. And there's nothing I can do. You know what? You can't take the Torah away from me. Please feed my chickens, because that's a mitzvah of the Torah. Lishmo al tivecha shetivisanu lekaim is mitzvah tzaba lechaim deraisa. I want to keep the mitzvah that you commanded us, tzaba lechaim deraisa. Al ma'ir is there with daim of nemra amilim hamatzitois v'nais govois govri yodoyim shal Moshe. That was the word that the Yerushalmi used, govri yodoyim shal Moshe. Moshe's hand strengthened. He strengthened his hands to pull the Torah away from Hashem, and Hashem was trying to take it away from us. And that struggle that took place then between Moshe Rabbeinu and Kosh Bochu is the ongoing struggle of each individual Jew today. To cleave to our morality, to cleave to our high moral ground in the face of terrible, terrible anti-high moral grounds. To maintain your knowledge of what's right and what's wrong in the worst situation. That's the struggle today. Chayus HaLavavus says the Shekosov Sham Alechad Min HaChassidim Shaya Kam Belayla Voime. One of the Chassidim Rishonim got up in Shah Avos Hashem in the gate of the love of God in the Chayus HaLavavus. One of the Chayim got to say like this, Elokai HaRaftani Ve'irum HaZaftani U'machshokshi HaLayla HaShaftani Ve'uzcho V'dgolcho HaRasani Inti Safeini Ve'esh Lo'isiv Kim Ava V'simcha B'cho. You have to understand how to translate this lotion, very poetic language. God, I have, you have left me hungry and naked. And in the darkness of night, you have forgotten about me. And my strength and my greatness you have removed from me. And even if you'll burn me in fire, what will I do? I will only add more and more love for you. All that you're going to get me to do is add more love and joy in your relationship with you. That's the Rishon talking. That's the demand on a Jew who knows what he's living for. If you understand that you have a personal relationship with God, it's not an abstract theoretical thing, it's real. So then you don't give it up so easy. You have a very good friend that you've built a long relationship with, that you've been through a lot with, yeah? And somebody comes to you and wants you to betray that friend. Not even a question. because it's not a theoretical relationship. You care about this person. Did you betray your own children? Of course not. Yeah? So how do you betray? If you're related with the Kosh Boch, who's their Kali, it's real. You have a real relationship with Hashem, so then you're faithful to it. Yeah, we get a bit insane sometimes, we get a bit meshuggah sometimes. The Gemara says we do a veira sometimes because we get a bit insane or whatever. Okay, you get the troubles of the times and the pressures. We do a veira, we do shtus, but the essence of the relationship is never affected. And that's because I